Wait, what episode are we on? How many have we done now? What are we on, like the fifth one?
I think we're on five, yeah.
Okay.
Kevin thinks it's six, so it's either five or six.
Oh, okay. Well, let's just not talk about that then, if we don't actually know.
We're super professional and prepared at all times.
Yeah. Okay. All right, welcome to the new episode of our podcast, Two Ladies in the Kingdom. I'm Emma Thomas. I'm a fighter and blogger living in Bangkok. And there's also Sylvie. Sylvie, who are you?
I'm Sylvie. I am also a blogger and fighter, but I live in Pattaya, which is maybe like 2 hours below Bangkok. And Emma and I both live in Thailand and think a lot about things about being in Thailand.
So. We have some opinions, and you're going to hear them.
This podcast is sponsored by Loblaw, which Emma and I both have. This is a female groin guard. They also make male groin guards. And this is a fantastic product. We don't say that only because they sponsor our show, but also because it protects our lady bits, which is fantastic. So you can order these through Amazon.UK or Amazon.US. They ship anywhere in the world. And we have a discount code, which is SAVE. The numeral 2 and ITK. So save 2 ITK and you get a discount and you can order both male or female guards depending on what your needs are. So that's what that is.
They're awesome.
Yeah. So Emma, what's going on with you?
Lots of things, but I'm kind of, well, as we all know, I'm like in between gyms at the moment. So I've left my gym. And now I'm kind of floating around. I went to train at Yokao for a little bit, which I actually really, really liked. But I can only train there as much as money will allow because it's expensive as shit. But we'll talk about that. So in the meantime, I've had lots of friends passing through Bangkok and friends who live here who are moving home. And so I've been spending time with them and kind of been doing a touristy thing for a while, which has been weird. It's been a nice break in routine, actually. Because Kelly went home, which was really sad.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Because she was at Sitmonchai for how long? A year?
I think a little bit more then, but yeah.
Yeah. And then she came to Bangkok and was training up Eminent Air but for, I think, at least 6 months. It was a while. Maybe a year. I've been here for so long, I keep losing track of who's here and for how long. But yeah, she just went home, so we had like a little goodbye dinner last week, which was sad. Then another friend of mine moved home, and before she went, we decided to go do something lame and touristy, so we went to the Cartoon Network water park, which was actually really fun.
But that's in my neck of the woods, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually not far from you at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super fucking expensive, it's ridiculous. When you get in there, obviously, they check your bag before you go in, so you can't take any food or water. So when you go in there, you have to pay their ridiculous prices. Mm. If you want to get some khao niao mo bing, like just like grilled pork and some sticky rice, it was like 300 baht.
What?
Which it would be like 20 baht on the street. Yeah, it was like 280 or something like that.
Was it good?
I didn't fucking buy that shit. What are you talking about?
How much is water? It's a water park.
Water was 30 baht.
That's kind of normal for like a bar or something.
Yeah, I think I paid something like 250 baht for some like mediocre pad thai. But I was like, I'm going to have one meal and then I'm not going to eat until I go home. But it was fun. I enjoyed it. There's a few water parks actually. It's the first one I've been to in Thailand. I was kind of worrying. When we were going up there, I was like, is this entirely safe? You know? But yeah, it was fun.
Was it busy?
Actually, it wasn't. We went on a Saturday, but the day we went, like, this company called SCG, I think they're an energy company, they were having, like, their family day, so all of their employees were there with all of their families, and everybody was in matching t-shirts. But it wasn't too bad. No. I think we were some of the only foreigners there.
Wow.
One guy who was working there got really mad at us for no reason. They have this, like, stupid system where if you wanted to go on this, like, one where you get one big tube or, like, rubber ring for, like, five people or whatever, you have to go down to the bottom of the slide, pick it up, And then you have to take it over to this dude who has a little pulley machine to take it up. I mean, I don't know why I need to be involved in that system, but we do. And then we have to walk up the stairs. And this guy who was, like, responsible for sending the rubber rings up the slide, he got, like, really mad. We just, like, gave him the tube, and then he, like, we didn't know what to do, so we were like, oh, where do we go? And he was, you, walking, over there! We were like, oh. It was, like, 9 a.m. I don't know how shitty his day could have been already, but he was really mad at us.
You are an excellent spokesperson for this water park. I don't want to go there at all, ever.
It's so much fun, except for the shitty staff and the really expensive food.
If nobody had been there, it would have been fantastic. What was training at Yokao like? You said that you had trained with with Manok.
I really enjoyed it. Actually, I kind of only went there because a friend of mine was training there, and he came through Bangkok, and I thought, oh, I'll go see you. I really enjoyed it. I didn't do any sparring. They told me that they spar and clinch and all that kind of stuff in the afternoons. Mm. But I think if I was to go there more often, they'd give it to me in the mornings if I wanted to. But Manop is a really fucking good trainer. I really enjoy training with him. It was kind of like having a one-on-one, like, private session. Even though I was in a group, I just paid for the group session. I'm not fucking paying for private. It's 2,000 baht to have a private with him.
Wow. For, like, 4,000 an hour?
4,000 baht to have a private with Sanchai.
Right.
But he was doing privates, like, non-stop while I was there.
Sanchai was?
Yeah. I don't know how much of that 4,000 he gets, but I think he's doing okay.
Yeah.
And what was really cool is that all of the fighters there, they were still, like, sparring and, like, interacting with the foreigners and even, like, the beginners and stuff. Mm. I've heard at, like, some gyms where, you know, they'd have all these, like, superstar fighters, but you wouldn't train with them.
Right.
It doesn't seem to be the case there. Even if you join the group session, they're going to spar with you. Mm. I really enjoyed it. And, it's like, as soon as I started doing pads with Manop, he was, like, changing things and sharpening my technique and things that hadn't been done for me in a long time. So it was kind of like, whoa. It was kind of like my whole experience leaving my gym, I'm kind of likening it to, like, leaving a bad boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Like, where you kind of stay in it because you're comfortable for so long, and then when you leave and then you finally kind of you get another experience with some other place or other person, you're like, oh, why the fuck did I stay there for so long? Like, and you get that other perspective.
You're like, oh, I should feel good about myself. That's like,
yeah,
I shouldn't feel shitty.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at right now.
What's his style? Is he, like, you've had pad work with quite a few different people, but is his style kind of very fight-oriented, or is it more corrective, or kind of how would you categorize him?
He was very, very corrective, like, all the time, but I loved that. Like, for me right now, that's what I was looking for. I mean, I can't afford to go and train with him all the time. And even, he said to me, he was like, this place is really expensive. I was like, what do you charge for a month? He was like, we don't even do that. Like, we will, I think you can pay, what was it? I think it was something like 10,000 baht for like 20 sessions or something. So, like, you could train for 10 days and have that gone.
Oh. So you buy, like, a package of time, basically.
Yeah. So I just kind of, I go in when I want to go in and I pay 500 baht for the session.
Right.
So, obviously, that's only going to last me so long.
Yeah.
I have yet to train with the elusive Far, who is Manop's daughter, but he told me all about her. Said she's 16, she's had like 50 fights, but he said she really loves for girls to come in and train and spar with her, so I'll have to go down there on a Saturday afternoon, I think, to catch her, because she's at school all the other time. Yeah, and then I get the typical thing when he finds out I'm a teacher, and he's like, you can teach my daughter English! I'm like, can I train for free?
Yeah, it's, there was a rumor about her fighting Petchy Jaw this month on PPTV, but I think that's not happening. There's the issue of Jija having already fought on the 9th on PPTV, which means that she can't be fighting again. But yeah. I think she's fighting on the 30th for a world title belt at this really huge event that's taking place in Bangkok.
Okay.
But I did not recognize the name of the girl she's fighting for that belt.
Okay. I just actually watched that Petchy Jaw fight with Rung Napa.
What did you think?
I think Rung Napa looked really nervous. I could see it in her face. Like, before the fight started, she looked really nervous.
They fought once before. I think when Rung Napa was, like, very new to the Phuormongpet gym. Uh-huh. And they're pretty close in size now. Like, Jija's getting much bigger. So I was pretty, like, I didn't get to see the fight right after it happened. It's been posted now, but I saw on Poor Mung Pet's page right after the fight, it was a photo of Krulek with Rungnapa, and he was like, we're just happy she didn't lose by knockout.
yeah, I mean,
That's a rough way to go into a fight.
yeah, fuck. I felt that way before.
yeah.
But you're always kind of like selling yourself short.
Yeah.
Well, at least I can get knocked out. It's kind of a shitty way to think about yourself, but I've done it.
Yeah. There are times, though, that you're, you know, super, super outmatched and you just go in for the experience and it's all you can. Yeah. So.
Like that time I fought that girl who was like 64 kilos. I say girl. She was like 20 years older than me. She beat the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Now, also, my touristy travels, I went to the Buddhist Hell Garden.
Yeah, that place was scary. You posted photos of that. You can see those on Emma's Under the Ropes Muay Thai page.
Yeah, I'll put a blog post about it and what it all means, because it's kind of freaky. I didn't even know that there was a concept of hell in Buddhism.
Mm.
So that was interesting to learn about. So you go to this, it's like a garden of a temple, and they've got all these, like, friggin' horrific statues depicting, like, what you'll be subjected to in hell if you commit, like, these certain acts in life. And it was fucking horrible. Yeah, but it was interesting.
There was, when I was looking at your photos, I felt like, one, it's super disturbing because it's very gory. Like, everything is the way that it would be in Christian hell, where it's, you know, like, people's entrails being pulled out and, like, vices and things like this. But I felt like part of the creepy factor was that the statues aren't very good. Like, like they're a little bit papier-mâché-ish.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that I could not make them, like, honestly, it's actual real art and all these things, but they're, like, the proportions, like, everyone's real stretched out and kind of, like...
Yeah, they all have, like, long tongues.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where that comes from, but there's a lot of that going on. Long-tongued people.
Did you come out of it thinking that you should probably not sin?
I went with a couple of friends and we just kind of had fun, like, checking off which ones we'd done. So that was all we got out of it. But there was also, like, this other part of the garden where it was, like, symbolizing all these different, like, Thai proverbs, and it wasn't as gory.
Mm.
I'll put the photos up of that. That was quite interesting. And then they had this other separate little garden of, like, I think it was some, like, Chinese thing of, like, their history, but it wasn't, like, horrible and gory.
Mm.
It was like a nice little pleasant garden. Yeah. And you could go and feed fishes and stuff.
Oh, that's good. That's, you know, for merit, so that you don't end up in hell.
Also, for merit, you can release some birds that they have caught and captured and put in a little box.
Yes.
Which is ridiculous. the not very funny thing was that just we saw one chick releasing some birds, and then, like, just a short walk from there was, like, one of the birds just, like, on the floor.
Oh!
They were like, oh, yeah.
That's very sad.
At least you're not going to hell. I mean, it's fine. It was interesting, and it was super cheap. Like, the bus from Bangkok to get there was, like, 67 baht.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was only, like, an hour and a half, so we went there in, like, half a day.
Does it go directly there, the bus?
No, it drops you off in, like, the center of Chonburi if you just, like, ask the driver to drop where you want to go. And then he dropped us, like, next to, like, a Songtao driver
right.
who took us the rest of the way. But, yeah, it's in Chonburi, which is, like, between Pattaya and Bangkok.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
I saw some pictures of, like, another hell garden place somewhere else in Bangkok that was, like, way worse. It's, like, there was this guy that had, like... He had, like, a huge ball sack for some reason, and there were, like, dogs chewing on it or something like that. So I'm kind of glad we didn't have to see that.
But you did see that in a photo.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, they had... It was way worse in that one. They had, like... I don't know what they were hanging from, but there was, like, six little statues of boys in school uniform, like, hanging from a fucking tree or something, and then people getting skinned. It was fucking horrific. Yeah. But I bet you all these parents are taking their kids there Like, yeah. Well, don't do this shit.
Gotta show them something, Emma.
Cool for Halloween, I guess. Other than that, it was pretty fucking terrifying.
Did you ever go to the White Temple up in Chiang Rai?
Yeah, I did.
So that place is really cool. It's made by one artist for people who haven't been around. You can look it up. But there's a lot of torture type scenes and a lot of pop culture references. So there's like a Predator, like from Predator, buried in the ground, and there's like Freddy Krueger and Superman and Batman and lots of penises.
Yep.
Everywhere.
Yeah, I remember when I was there, I think it was like 6 years ago, but the dude, it was still being painted on the inside. Mm. It wasn't quite finished, but it's so cool.
Yeah.
But the guy who made it, like, there's a cardboard cutout of him, like, up. You can go and take pictures with, which is so typical.
Yeah.
That's not even, like, when you first come here, you're like, why the fuck? But then when you've been in Thailand for a while, you're like, oh, yeah, okay.
Right, you're like, where's the cardboard cutout? Like,
yeah.
Direct me to it.
Where do we take photos? With our thumbs up.
So I have an interesting development in that I have kind of picked up a sponsorship at my gym, which mm-hmm. is very cool. It's not a traditional sponsorship. A lot of sponsored fighters are men.
Yep, there's that.
And then the way it generally works in kind of bigger gyms that allow sponsorships is that you train and potentially eat and sleep at the gym for free, and then they take a percentage of your fight earnings and this kind of thing. That's not what my sponsorship is. Pinu's uncle owns the Royal Thai Residence, which is an apartment building, and they're revamping their website, and they're also revamping Phet Rung Rung's website, my gym. So I'm helping with that, and instead of monetary compensation, the uncle is sponsoring my training. So my training is now paid for by the sponsorship, which is really, really cool to me, and I'm happy to be working for my gym and for Royal Thai Residence, because he actually sponsors the kids. He puts side bets down for us when we fight for side bets and stuff like that. So,
would you move into that building?
No. Oh. It's one, because I like where I live, and it's in a different area, but it's a really nice place in terms of kind of what I like about it is that the contrast between the very old school, no frills, like baseline of Phet Rung Rung, it's a very like traditional old style gym, and then you have like a pool and kind of nice rooms at Royal Thai. So they have like package deals where you can pay for training and your room all in one price. And what I like about that is that you just go do your work in the gym with like the kind of training that's at Phet Rung Rung, and then you can have kind of a nice place to stay.
Okay.
Instead of being like, why doesn't your gym have air conditioning? And I'm like, because it's Thailand.
Yeah, and because it's outside.
At my other gym, they have air conditioning in the weight room, and I've been doing runs there prior to my afternoon pad work. I can't tell you how much it bothers me that I've become one of these people who thinks that aircon makes you sick. Like, I hate air conditioning, and Kevin and I fight about it all the time because he loves air conditioning.
I'm one of those people that gets cold really easily. And
yes!
I'm a bitch when I'm cold.
Yeah.
isn't it fucking consistently cold where you're from?
In Colorado? A large proportion of the year, but not all the time, no. But when it gets cold, it's really cold.
Yeah, exactly. Also, like, I don't know that aircon, like, makes you sick, but I definitely have, like, developed this, like, allergy to, like, the shitty air living in Bangkok. Like, if I have my fan on or my aircon, I'll just start sneezing. And I didn't start doing that until about 2 years after I started living here. And it really bothers the shit out of me. I have to, like, get some people in to come and clean my air.
You clean your fans, though, yeah?
Yeah, I hate doing that.
Yeah, I hate it, too.
You're like, oh, this is disgusting. Look how much dust is
you're
on
like,
it.
I've been breathing this. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
And then we can talk more about the big cards that are coming up because it's almost Mother's Day, which is like the huge fight day for female fighters in Thailand. But I'm getting ready to fight. It's all but confirmed. I'm waiting to hear the like last second thing. But on the 12th, I should be fighting against Loma Luk Bun Mi in Bangkok for the UN trophy. And Loma and I have fought three times before, and I've not yet beat her. I do believe I'll beat her this time, but she is so... She's so amazing. She has incredibly high ring IQ. She's not big. She's not super strong, but she's just incredibly technical and, like, really knows how to stay in her comfort zone. And she just fought in Australia against Kim Townsend, who's a little bit bigger than she is. And I talked to Loma right before the fight, and she was so nervous about Kim being bigger than her. And she did not take into account how much more experience she has than Kim at all. Like, that didn't even come into her mind as, like, being important. But she did incredibly well in that fight. I totally geeked out because it wasn't in Thailand, it was in Australia, so Loma went over the ropes to get into the ring. I freaked out, and Kevin's like, you should ask her about it, and I'm like, I don't even know, A, how to ask her about it, and B, whether she would talk about it, because it's not something that you can not have peer pressure about when you're here.
Yeah. It's interesting that you said she was nervous, because we don't really, like, visualize our, like, Thai opponents to get nervous about
no.
us.
No! And she was like, if I don't knock her out, I can't win.
Which is how we feel half the time.
Right, but she's actually fought abroad quite a few times. She's fought in Japan, she fought in England, she was in Sweden for the IFMAs, and she never wins abroad. And I think that it's partially because there's a disparity in scoring, which she does not understand. Like, when I asked her about the IFMAs in Sweden, I was like, did they not really score your throws? She's like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, obviously they didn't because you lost that fight, but... it's the same way that people will come to Thailand and have a few fights and don't know anything about the scoring, and they're just like, I was robbed in that fight. So she goes abroad, doesn't know anything about the scoring, and is like, I have no idea why I lost that fight. But she's really hard to keep your balance with, and balance is a huge part of scoring in Thailand. So
her balance is amazing. When I was watching her fight in Australia, I thought it must be so frustrating to be her opponent. She's like grabbing the leg and trying to kick the other one out, but she's just not moving.
And Loma's just like sitting there like, oh, do you have my leg?
Yeah, exactly.
And then she throws you when you're trying to do something. So I don't really train for opponents so much, but you have to train for Loma. And I'm kind of training for Loma all the time because she's like my world championship belt. Fighting her is like my goal or whatever. So
she's also your nemesis.
She's my nemesis, but in like a good way.
Yeah.
Like, we're friendly
she's
about it.
She's like the big boss at the end of the video game.
Yes, the fucking undefeatable like big boss who once you finally win, that's like the end of the game.
Wait, where is this fight? Where is it?
This is in Bangkok.
Ooh, I can come.
Yes, so once that's fully confirmed, I will let you know first and foremost. But I've been working a lot on just my balance in the clinch because she's gonna fucking throw me so much.
Okay. Yeah.
And so mentally, I have to be okay with the fact that I'm getting off my ass a lot. And then on top of that, I need to kind of try to keep my balance as much as possible to not be thrown. But I think that if I look at my previous fights with her, I've done well striking when coming in, so I really need to amp up on that, because she does not score a lot outside of these throws. So if you take some of the throws away, it's a very, very narrow scoring type of fight. So you just have to minimize the scoring that she has and try to like keep up with it.
How many rounds are you fighting?
It should be 5 rounds.
Okay.
It's 3 weeks, well, a little less than 3 weeks away, and I'm, like, just totally, like, tunnel visioned working on this. And if you knew the other day when I went into training, I was, like, 3 rounds in and, like, trying not to vomit and things like this, and he was, like, he kind of just shook his head and he's, like, you're stronger than she is. I think you can win, but it's going to be really hard. And I almost started crying because he never, ever has said, I think you can beat Loma. He's always just shaking his head like, oh, well, you know. You can't beat Loma. So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And Loma's a really cool fighter in that she's been fighting for a very long time. She's very small. She's like, she walks around at like 47, 48 kilos. And she's like 19, 20, something like this. So she's not really going to get bigger. But she's world champion and she's gold medalist in Thai games, national games, international, all these things. So last year when she won gold at the IFMAs, the Thai government gave her money for having won a gold medal, and then this last year she won silver, so she got probably less, but still something for that. And on Facebook I've seen that her family is, like, building a house. It's huge. Not, like, unreasonably so, but it's a really nice house. She's from Buriram. And she's always posting pictures of the progress of that, and I think that they're kind of working on the Lik Bun Mi gym as well. So, in terms of Thai culture, children take it upon themselves to kind of pay their parents back for the years and money that they spent raising their kids, which is something that Westerners don't care about at all. but, so, at her age, and as a woman, and all of these things, for her to be providing that for her family, and this success, and her kind of, like, making merit by paying back her parents in creating this better life for her family, is huge. As a female fighter, there's not a lot of opportunity for that, because women just don't get paid as much, and our opportunities are so much less, so I think that she's just an incredibly badass, awesome, cool fighter, and her girlfriend, Chomani, is also a really, really famous fighter, who I'm, like, in my head when I'm doing pad work, I'm, like, hearing Chomani's shrieks to, like, get myself ready. It's, like, part of my visualization for this fight, so I'm excited about
that. It's gonna be a really fucking cool fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's on a big show. Yeah. I'm excited.
So, what have you heard about this fight? Well, about the fights coming up for the Queen's birthday and on the 30th, and it's, like,
not everywhere. Much, to be honest, but then I've been kind of separated from the whole thing because I haven't been, like, at a gym full
time. Right.
The promoter, is it the same promoter who did that Songkran show that you fought on?
I know at least one of the I don't know if it's all one show or if there's two shows.
Yeah.
But if it is all one show, it is Palm.
Okay. Because he did contact me a while ago and asked me if I could fight on this show that was on the 30th that he's doing. But he told me the Queen's birthday on the 30th, but I was like, whatever, because it was a while before. But obviously, that's not happening, because if I don't have a gym, I don't really have the ability to fight right now. But also, I think Master Tony called him and was like, piss off, basically. Because he really hates him, because he always tries to fuck us over. Which, whatever, I don't know. I don't really know anything about who's fighting on these shows. I think you seem to know a lot more about that than I do.
So this fight on the 30th, or this card on the 30th, appears to be massive. Like, every Thai woman I know, and quite a few Westerners that I know, are all fighting on this card, and if they're not fighting on the 30th, they're fighting for the same promoter on the 12th.
Yeah.
So it's like they created two shows. The 30th is a little bit of, like, the B card, and then the 12th is, like, the super heavy-duty, all-the-world titles kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I fought in Hua Hin last week, and I was looking for an opponent, and every single girl I contacted already had a fight, so they couldn't fight. Which is how I ended up with Nong Nain, is that she was the only one who didn't have a program coming up, and she's actually super awesome. It was an awesome fight to have. But so this fight on the 30th, like, every single person I can think of, I contacted Dakadain Grasshopper, mm-hmm. who we've talked about before. She had a fight coming up. All the girls from Rungtep Thonburi are fighting. Like, Pet Dapi, who I think is one of my favorite female fighters. She's so badass and, like, has, like, laser vision looking at you when she's fighting, like, in the ring. And then I think they have, like, Fanny's fighting on the 30th. From Greece, and then there's a couple Americans I know who are fighting. And then on the 12th, I think they have people like Teresa and probably Ashley Nichols, and these, like, kind of top names are going to be on the 12th. So,
okay.
The thing about the Queen's birthday that people in the West need to know is that the Muay Thai, as part of royal patronage, like, fighting for royalty, goes way back in Muay Thai history. And so fighting on the king's birthday is a huge honor. And then fighting on the queen's birthday tends to be when female fights really have this high prestige. They set up at Sanam Luang, which is the royal fields, and they have, like, a you know, world championships and televised and all this stuff. So if you are at a gym where you don't get to fight very often as a woman, you'll probably be fighting on the queen's birthday somewhere.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. So it's exciting, but it's also because they're trying to pack so many of these fights in on a couple of different days, and because they're in Bangkok, some people are being subject to the 21-day rule where they normally wouldn't be, which is that you can't fight within 21 days of your next program in Bangkok. So all of these women who are fighting on these shows are basically out of commission for like 40 days because it's the before and after of the show.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a nightmare, but it's cool that they're all fighting, and it seems to be some pretty good matchups going on as
well. Yeah, and it's a good promotion. Like, I'm excited that they're putting on these all-female shows.
Yeah, the money seems to be pretty good as well. I think that the, like, baseline pay for quite a lot of those fights, especially with that promoter, seem to be higher than they are for what women are generally making.
Yeah.
Which is good, but that promoter is also kind of a nightmare to deal with. As a Westerner, I don't know if it's hard for Thai women.
Yeah. So. But also, he has, like, a whole gym of Thai women, and his promotions are for his girls. So, like, if you're going to come in and fight his girls, you can expect, like, a hard time. That's just how it is.
Emma and I were just talking about this before we did the podcast, but there was this promotion, this fight promotion just the other day that is illustrative of how difficult it can be at times, even in Thailand. In the West, people have lots of cancellations and, you know, your opponent doesn't make weight or, like, drops out, you know, right before your fight, and it's very hard for especially women because there are just fewer of us. There was this fight I was excited about. It's Fanny from Greece, who's an amazing fighter. She's been fighting in Thailand for, like, 11 or 12 years or something. And then Mary, who is from Verona Farm Gym, but sometimes she fights out of other gyms, and I think that she used to be at Phor Mong Pet, so she's really close to Nam Dan and those girls. But so I was excited about this matchup because I like both of those fighters very much, and Mary's very cool. And so I was, like, watching as this card was being promoted, and there's, like, a 200,000 baht side bet, which is a lot. So I was very excited, and then all of a sudden, I'm, like, watching the news come through, and there's a photo of Mary with a different opponent. Like, it's not Fanny anymore. It's this girl, Emmy Pizza, who I've been wanting to fight for quite a while, but she's a little bit bigger and kind of hard to get a fight with.
Excellent name.
Yeah, plus an awesome name. So they post the photo, and then in the comments of the photo, someone's like, "Who canceled this fight?" And I'm like, "What are they talking about?" So I start, like, looking, and they say that Emmy canceled the fight. So I go to Mary's Facebook page, and she's really upset because she probably walks at, like, 55 kilos, something like this. So she dropped down to 52 to fight Fanny. Fanny's not in that fight anymore, and she's matched up with Emmy, who's probably, like, 50 kilos. So they ask her to lose 2 more kilos on top of having already lost some, so she's really not happy. But she loses it, and then after she's dropped that weight, Emmy Pizza's camp is like, "No, we're not going to fight after all." So Mary, reasonably enough, is on Facebook being like, "Don't fucking say that you're going to fight if you're not going to fight. Don't make me lose weight if you're not going to fight," all this stuff. So she goes home, and then today I see that they've replaced Mary with another opponent to fight Emmy Pizza. So there is not one person in that matchup who was from the original matchup. Like, they rotated everybody out. I have no idea if the side bet's still going. But so I contacted Fanny to see what happened, and she basically said that they had told her that Mary couldn't fight, but she didn't go all the way to weigh in to find this out. So it's like they just switched everybody, and, like, everybody's pissed off about it. I assume that the 200,000 baht side bet had quite a lot to do with all of that changing out and disagreements and stuff, because it's always about money when it's like that. But I can't imagine how frustrated I would be in Mary's position. It sucks for Fanny, too, but at least she didn't drive all the way out there and cut all weight to, like, be on the card and then not fight.
I mean, especially when you're like, you prepare for this fight, and then your opponent apparently pulls out, and then actually she's just fighting someone else.
Right. Just tell me. Like, just be upfront about it. But I had this experience recently where I couldn't fight a fight that, because I have this fight on the 12th, and the guy who had booked me for that fight kept calling me and kept calling Pinu and, like, wouldn't stop. And Pinu's like, "Tell this guy to stop calling me because I actually have nothing to do with booking your fight."
Yeah.
And he just would not take my, like, I can't fight this fight as an answer. And so I realized that saying I'm hurt or my uterus fell out or whatever is, like, the only way to get these people to stop trying to get you on the card, because your explanation of I can't do it just does not fly.
Which explains why we get so many opponents that pull out because of their period.
Yeah.
And they're like, what the fuck? That's not a valid reason.
Yeah, so I've seen a couple of times, if a fighter, a female fighter, loses a fight, the explanation afterwards will be she was on her period and so she was, like, weakened by this. Or I've seen men tell me that so-and-so is not training at whatever gym I went to train with a woman because she's on her period or whatever. This is the weird thing. I have never once heard a Thai woman talk about her own period, but I've heard men talk about her period on behalf of Thai women, like, numerous times. It's very weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I had an opponent pull out for a queen's birthday fight the day before because of her period.
But this is a thing of living in a country where there are cultural differences like this. I was raised in a house that's almost all boys, right? So I have my three older brothers and my dad, so it was just my mom and me. And so I was always, like, thrown in with the wolf pack of the boys, and I remember when, like, feminine hygiene product commercials would come on, they'd, like, sneer and be like, this should be on its own channel, like, I shouldn't be subjected to this gross, like, blah, 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 like, whatever, as though, like, periods are just, like, this thing you can't talk about.
I remember being embarrassed when those ads came on when I was, like, no.
Right, so we have it in Western culture that it's kind of this, like, unspoken, private, whatever, like, just take care of your business thing, but here it's, like, super taboo, and there is, depending on how conservative you are, this, like, women won't train while they're on their period, they shouldn't fight when they're on their period, you don't, like, talk to your trainer about it kind of thing. And so it's weird because I know that I have it in my own culture to a degree, but then I'm totally, like, up against this wall of how taboo it is here that I won't talk about it at all with my trainer. Like, he's like, why do you suck today? And I'm like, I'll be better soon. Like, don't worry about it. But I never say anything about it. So I can't imagine saying, like, I can't fight that fight because I'm on my period. One, because I don't believe that about myself, but two, because it's, like, because it's so taboo here, I can't imagine raising the issue at all whatsoever.
Yeah, and what's interesting, I mean, I find, at least with a lot of my students, I'll be like, oh, so how are you today? They'll be like, oh, not good. I'm like, why? I have diarrhea. Like, this happens all the time.
Right.
Like, they will tell me in the appearance. That's just fucking disgusting. Sorry. Actually, I decided to, well, I didn't decide to, but I ended up, like, challenging this in one of my classes last week. I was like, I had a class on, like, all these crazy products that came out in the last year, and one of them was, like, these period pants that, like, you don't need to wear any other, like, feminine products. I don't know exactly how it works. it was, like, in the list, and I didn't really check everything on it when I did the class. So it was like, oh, I guess I'm teaching this. It was, like, 25 products, and it was one of them that was in there, and I handed out it. It was one male student who was, like, really happy to talk about it. He wanted to know all the different vocabulary. But some girls were just like, we'll just talk quietly amongst ourselves about this.
I remember in health class in, like, middle school, they'd separate us. Like, the boys would go to one room and the girls would go to the other so that we could talk about it.
You come back and be like, oh, what did the boys learn?
Yeah, they learned how to put a condom on a banana or something. But, like, I remember that the more awkward thing at that age, rather than, like, not being able to discuss it in front of the boys, was that girls' bodies are so different at that age. That you've got girls who have had their period for, like, 3 years when they're 12 years old, and then girls who won't have it for another 4 years, and they're just embarrassed out of their minds that they don't know what people are talking about, and they're like, oh, no, totally, like, I stuffed my bra. I don't know what you're talking about.
I remember after that, one of those classes, I hadn't started my period at that time, but they give you, like, a little pack of, like, feminine products, and it kind of just went in a bag at the bottom of my wardrobe until, like, I needed it. And I remember my dad, I think he was like looking through my wardrobe for something, and he kind of found the bag and was like, ugh, and just threw it to the side, and nobody said anything.
I was the last of my friend, there were like three of us, and I was the last, and so it was like everyone was waiting for me, because our moms are like super awful hippies who wanted to like have this big ceremonial celebration of our like coming of age, and not only is it not something I wanted to celebrate, but at that age, it's not something you want to celebrate with your mom.
No.
So they took us on a like road trip vacation to celebrate to Nebraska to like look at cranes at 4 a.m. because that's what 13-year-old girls are way into. So I was thoroughly traumatized by ever letting my mom know.
That's incredible. I didn't even tell my mom when I started my period.
I should have gone that route.
She probably knew. I mean, because she's my mom, she probably knew. But we didn't have a conversation about it. I think it was like after like, I don't know, 6 months, and I'd been like, "Mom, can you help me get this stain out?" And she was like, "Okay," you know, and that was that.
But so you were buying your own stuff, or you just took whatever was in the cabinet from your mom?
I remember my mom like telling me like a long time before I started my period, like, if you ever need stuff, that's where it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, we didn't really have many conversations about it other than like, don't flush your tampons down the toilet, please. Yeah. And I remember one time that she was watching like one of those daytime TV programs, and this girl was on there who'd had toxic shock syndrome, and she like showered me down to my bedroom and forced me to watch it. I guess it worked. I still remember it. But my mom kind of likes to avoid all of that stuff. I remember her coming into my room and saying, like, "Emma, can you give these condoms to your younger brother? Because I don't want to do it." I was like, "Oh, well, that's fine." She was like, "I'm not going to. You do it. Here."
And you're like, "Awesome. I can't wait to do that."
I mean, it didn't bother either of us. I was like, "Hey, I'm not using any of these. I'm not having any sex. You have these."
You're like, "I don't even have a penis. You can have these."
Yeah, my mum would have been thoroughly embarrassed.
Oh, goodness.
Okay, so with all this talk of, like, these big shows on coming up at the end of this month, and for the Queen's birthday, there's going to be, like, a lot of good Farang versus Thai female matchups. And it's interesting how the differences in fighting, like, between fighting a foreign girl and fighting a Thai girl. I've only ever fought two Farang girls. How many have you fought?
Like 10 times, but the same one several times, so probably like 6 or 7 altogether.
Yeah. And in comparison to like fighting 150 Thai girls. So, I mean, you did a really short interview with Nam Tan and in a UTR about this, right?
Mm, yeah.
What does she have to say about it?
I was asking her as a Thai fighter what the difference was between fighting Thais and fighting Westerners, and she had an interesting answer that I wasn't anticipating, which was she said basically Thai women all tend to have good technique, but they stay kind of the same.
Yeah.
Whereas Western women advance really quickly because they're very enthusiastic about learning Muay Thai, and so they'll kind of try new things and different things. And so if you fight one 4 months apart, it's going to be a different fight, whereas if you fight the same Thai girl 2 years apart, it's going to be kind of similar.
Yeah.
So,
and it's also because a lot of these Thai girls, they started from very young, so that, you know, they might be very solidified in their style.
Yeah.
Whereas we might have only just started fighting, so there's going to be big jumps in between fights in terms of progress.
Yeah, and Nung M up in the north in an interview had said something about how Westerners kind of throw whatever they want at any time. It's this, like, total free association of whatever strike you want to throw, but that she feels that Thai girls have more of a system of what goes together, so you won't get these like crazy two strikes going together. You tend to see, you know, the kick will follow with the same side punch or something like that. Like it's more strategic, systematic in terms of the technique.
Yeah. What I will say about fighting Thai girls is that they are so fucking good at pulling a fight out in like the last round, even if you've like really hurt them in the third or fourth round.
Yeah.
They'll be really good at, like, just dancing that off and, like, just completely winning with the fifth round. And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I thought I was winning that whole time.
Yeah. I would say that with Thai women, there are more ways to lose than there are against the Western fights that I've seen. It's especially with Western scoring, if you look at Westerners fighting in Western scoring, it tends to be this kind of, like, frontal assault where the first few rounds are, like, the hardest, and it may kind of, you know who's winning for most of the fight, whereas in Thai scoring and Thai style, there tends to be this kind of, like, reversal, so you think you like, really know the person who you're fighting after two rounds. You're like, oh, well, she's not good at these things, and I'm strong at these things. And then in the third or fourth round, she pulls some shit out that you're like, how are you doing that? You weren't doing that earlier.
I was not prepared for that.
They're like, I also do this. And you're like, I wasn't ready for that. That's interesting.
Yeah. One thing that Masori always did say to me was that you can't beat a Thai by fighting like a Thai.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of his big things. Everybody knows that he has a very different training style to, like, traditional Thai camps. So that was kind of his strategy towards it. And I know when you first come here and you really want to just, like, emulate that, like, beautiful style that these Thai girls have, and you find yourself wanting to, like, copy their movements, but you're not going to be able to do it better than they are. You know?
Right.
So I found myself, like, kind of just waiting, like, for nothing. because you see them kind of just bouncing on the front leg and waiting, but, you know, they have strategy to it. With me, I'm just kind of, when you first start, you're, like, just trying to copy the movement, but there's nothing, you're not going anywhere with it, you know?
Yeah. We, Kevin and I refer to it as the, like, Jedi mind trick, which, for a long time I would have these opponents who would put themselves on the rope. Like, mm-hmm. they're back to the rope. And so, from a Western perspective, you're like, oh, well, her back is on the rope. Like, she's in this retreating, like, I'm more aggressive, I'm winning this situation. But then she's just sitting there, like, waiting for you to come in, and it's like, come get me. And
so she can, like, drop you and you look like shit.
Yes, and so you stand there, like, not coming in, and then this person whose back is on the ropes makes it look like she's completely controlling you, and you look like an asshole who, like, can't take one step to kick her.
Yeah, exactly.
It's taken me, I've had so many in my fights, I've had so many, like, revelations and the progression of, like, learning the next step of fighting this way or that way, and I've lost so many fights in the fifth round by not knowing how to fight a fifth round, and so I just keep barreling forward, and I look like a complete asshole because I'm, like, trying to catch, like, a fish or something, and it just keeps slipping out, and you totally look inept.
Especially in Thai scoring, when you're, like, just running towards them in the last round, like, that really looks bad for you.
Yeah, you look very desperate, like, you're trying to catch up. And so I would say it's really only in the last, like, 30 fights or something for me that I've learned how to fight a fifth round where I have to take a gauge of where I am in the fight and can I step back or can I not.
Yeah.
Which is not something that I ever had to think about when fighting in the West, not only because our scoring doesn't go that way, but also because I was in a very different state of my development in Muay Thai. Like, it's...
Mm-hmm.
I fought a Westerner semi recently where I was winning all the way through, but moving forward the entire time, and in the fifth round I backed off, and the look on her face was like, what the fuck? Like, I have no idea what just happened. And I was like, I remember that. Like, I remember having fights where the Thai girl would all of a sudden just, like, she's like, and that's it? Like, shows over and just kind of backs up, and you're like, what? You, like, look around, you're like, what do I do? And they're like, go! And you're like, oh, crap. Yeah.
But then you feel shitty because it's like, if I run at her, she's going to see everything that I'm doing, and I just look desperate, and she's, it really fucks with your mind, actually, when they do that.
It does. It's like 90% mental, the way that you fight Thai girl strategy in Thailand. And sometimes, every now and then, you'll have a fighter who's just incredibly strong, and it's just like, it hurts every time she hits you, and it's like, it's hard to kind of, like, figure out, how to angle your way in and stuff like this, but most of the time it's this, like, chess match of trying to get your mind around the frustration you're feeling at how all of that is going. And in my most recent fight in Hua Hin, this woman I fought, Nong Nain, is, like, really, really good at, like, putting herself in these positions where she's hard to approach on, and in round four she started running from me, and I was, like, please, God, do not make me chase this girl for two rounds, because it feels so shitty. Like, mentally, yeah. It's so hard to recover from, like, chasing someone. Mm-hmm. I was like, I have to do something. I was so panicked that I was just going to be chasing this girl for two rounds. And I ended up knocking her out, which is, like, the only answer I had to
that. Well, that worked out.
That worked out well, but, whew, it's hard. And then with the first two rounds being kind of like a feel-out thing here, whatever assessment you're making of your opponent, you kind of expect them to really bring it out in the third, and sometimes they won't. They'll bring it out in the fourth, and you're like, I thought I'd really, like, match what you were going to do, and then it's, yeah. They just step up another one.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen, like, huge variations with the different Thai girls that I fought, so, like, I can tar them all with the same brush, but that they are really good at pulling out that fifth round and yeah. surprising you and not showing when they're hurt. Like, a lot of the time, I'm particularly bad at seeing when I've hurt someone, I'll admit that, but it's been a lot of times where, like, I've not been able to see it until someone showed me the video, played it back to me, and been like, look at this, yeah. like, you yeah. should have gone forward at this point.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
The poker face is amazing. Judges.
Yeah.
But you've had more three-round fights here. Do you find that Thai girls adjust to the three-round fights, or do you think that that's more of an advantage coming from the West because we're so, like, frontal assault heavy on the earlier rounds?
Do you remember when we fought on the Queen's birthday last year and somebody asked you, or you said that somebody had said to you when I was fighting, oh, a foreign girl can't win for three rounds. They can't win a three-round fight.
Yeah, there was a gambler standing next to me, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the three-round fights, I've only had maybe, yeah, I've had a few of them. Most of them I stopped early, so it's hard, but I think they do adjust to it. They're definitely not as slow in the first two rounds. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they'd be wasting a lot of time, you know?
Yeah.
But they still, in my experience, do use that kind of backwards style. Like, when I fought on the Queen's birthday that time, and she won the first two rounds, then for the last round just danced backwards the whole time. Yeah. It was so annoying. Because that's all she needed to do, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very frustrating.
But yeah.
I don't like three-round fights.
I think that gambler, what he was saying is that Thai girls have this risk of getting tired. So, like, if you take out the number of rounds so they're not going to get tired, that their weapons and techniques are just, you can't handle it.
Yeah, because a lot of the times, I mean, especially with your style, is you'll knock them out in, like, the fourth round.
Yeah.
When they've gotten tired.
But you need those early rounds to tire them out, which
yeah.
is the... That's the hard thing about clinch fighting, is that if you don't, you put in all the work, and they can be tired after the fight, if the fight, like, is only three rounds, but you gotta, like, make it work within that time.
Yeah. So. One difference that I also found is, like, I don't know if it's with, I mean, it's not been with the girls that I fought, but I've seen it generally, like, when people talk online, is that before and after the fights, Thai girls are very graceful, and they're happy to talk to you, and... Mm. There's none of this, like, bullshitting, like, giving each other evils, you know, the way in, you know, unless the promoter asks for it, which is always real. I saw a post on Instagram, like, some meme that was like, oh, the awkward moment when you're backstage before a fight, but, like, I've never found that to be awkward. Like, I've so many times just sat there and chatted to them, you know?
Yeah. I think that I've relaxed over time with that, but there is definitely, like, for a long time, I was realizing that the girls who will smile at me and be really sweet are the ones you really have to watch out for. Like,
yeah, because they're too fucking relaxed about it.
Yeah. Like, hi, and you're like, oh, she's sweet, and then you get in, she's, like, elbowing you in the first round.
Oh, yeah. And then they come up to you afterwards and they're like, sorry, and you're like, yeah, whatever. You're, like, resentful.
You're like, you're not sorry at all. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. I did have this one experience. It was, like, my fourth fight or something, where the girl was really nice, but her friend came up to me after the fight and, like, walked past me and shoulder-barged me for some reason. And while I was getting my hand wrapped, she was, like, sitting in the doorway, like, staring at me, like, making it very obvious. It was really strange. But the actual girl was for her. That was a strange experience.
I had a hard time when I was up in Chiang Mai and just less experienced in terms of not having spent as much time here. And my trainers knew all of my opponents. Like, they'd be chatting to my opponents before my fight, and I'm like, why is he talking to my opponent? Like, it totally got in my head about, like, why is my opponent friendly with my trainer?
Yeah.
Or, like, whatever. And now I know everybody. Like, when I go somewhere, like, I go to Hua Hin or I go up to, you know, Karat or something, and I know all of these people, and so I'm, like, you know, chatting to everybody, and it's like, of course you know each other. Of course he knows all of my opponents. They've been in Chiang Mai as fighters for, like, 6 years. Like,
yeah.
Of course you know them. Yeah. You just chill out, I guess.
You were supposed to fight a foreigner originally for the fight you did Hua Hin, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much I would say I was supposed to fight her. The way that the fights got scheduled, it kind of appeared to me that I was told I had the fight maybe before he had even asked her. So, I don't know that she had ever agreed to that fight. But yeah, it was supposed to be this Canadian fighter named Regan, who has fought a couple of the same girls that I've fought in New York way back in the day. So I think she's been around for a long time. She's actually a very successful fighter, and now she's fighting in training in Uban, but I don't know how long she's been there.
Okay.
Yeah. But maybe eventually we'll run into each other. I don't know. I don't know how long she's here.
Yeah, and sometimes they will just put people on the poster who aren't even fighting just to make it.
Yeah.
Especially in Hua Hin, they do that a lot.
Yeah. They're like, this is a photo of a Westerner. Just put it there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they put, like, a little picture of a belt on it.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, I'm from, like, Ecuador or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I talked a little bit about Loma and, like, explained what. A little bit about her, but you were going to talk about Iman a little bit.
Yeah, Iman Barlow. I mean, most people who know anything about female Muay Thai will know who she is. Like, she's a very obvious choice to talk about, but I'm excited for her because she's just been signed to Lion Fight. She's going to be fighting on September the 2nd, but the girl that she's fighting, I'm not familiar with her. I think her name was Lara Fernandez from Spain. You ever heard of her?
No.
Okay, but Iman's been fighting a lot of, like, European fighters. She's been fighting for Infusion for a while. I don't know if her thing with Lion Fight means that she's not going to be on Infusion anymore. But she's had, like, close to 90 fights, I think.
Mm.
Maybe 100 fights. She's been fighting since she was, like, 2 years old. And she fights all the time. Like, it's about time that she got on a show like this.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of excited for this opportunity for her and to see where it goes.
I'm very impressed with how frequently she's able to fight in the West, because I'm able to fight a lot because I'm in Thailand, but she will have fights like every 3 weeks or, you know, kind of thing like this, which is, she flies around all over the place. And
Yeah, she's doing really well. I mean, also it's because I'm English, so it's a British girl get on Lion Fight, I'm like, woo! But, I mean, I don't know how well known she is in the States.
I think she's pretty well known, at least among the female fighters in America. I think she'll be a big draw at Lion Fight.
And also, Anissa Mexen from France is going to be fighting on Lion Fight too. And I was really hoping they would fight each other.
Again, yeah.
Yeah, because no one ever got to see that fight. Infusion. I'm hoping that's going to happen at some point, but let's see.
Does Anissa have an opponent, or is she just signed?
Not that I know of. I haven't heard of an opponent yet, but she's got 95 fights as well.
Yeah.
And again, like, Iman has too many titles to count.
Yeah.
Like, it'd just be great for those two to fight on that show. But maybe they're going to, like, build up to it and then have them fight for a title or something.
Yeah. I'm excited to have their weight class in Lion Fight. Lion Fight tends to be a little bit bigger, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's normally like 54, 57 kilos.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't normally get to see many girls their size, so I'm excited.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool.
Way to go, Lion Fight. All right, so do you have recommendations for stuff outside of Muay Thai? We've been kind of closing off our shows geeking out about different podcasts and books and stuff.
I'm still stuck on My Favorite Murder at the moment.
Have you made it through all of them? Are you, like, caught up?
I'm pretty much caught up, and I just yesterday listened to a new one called Actual Innocence, which is about, like, people who spent a lot of time in jail for crimes they didn't commit and then got exonerated.
That's so sad.
I just listened to one episode of that yesterday, so, I can't really say too much about that, but I'm really into that kind of shit.
Yeah.
I'm, like, finding all these lists, like, the top true crime podcasts, and then just going through all of them and seeing what I like. But no other podcasts I'm into at the moment. I did like this 10K race a few weeks ago, and I was looking at the photos of it, the horrible like running photos where you're, you have like a double chin. There's one of me where like it was taken like the exact moment like my front foot hit the ground, and it looks like I have like jowls, like. There's another one where I'm like smiling, and I thought, what am I smiling at? Because I know that I was listening to that episode of My Favorite Murder where they talk about the WWE wrestler Chris Benoit about how he murdered his whole family and then killed himself. So I don't know what I could.
So you're caught between like resting bitch face and laughing at murder. Like two options.
Smart.
Yeah, I,
yeah, and I don't think either, what are you guys talking about?
Huh?
What are you into at the moment?
Oh, so I'm caught up with, My Favorite Murder, which makes me super bummed, because then I have to wait every week for the new one to come out. I really hate that. I, like, binge listening to things.
Yeah.
But I also realized that listening to murder first thing in the morning is not my favorite, so I've been saving that for, like, later in the day. But I was recently listening to a, I'm old, so I say book on tape, but it's actually just an audiobook. And it's by this guy named Tim Grover, who is, he doesn't like being called a personal trainer, but he's totally a personal trainer and, like, a mental coach to very high, like, the highest basketball stars, so, like, Michael Jordan, he worked with LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, and his book is called Relentless, and he's basically talking about how there are these three stages of, like, the highest athletes, and he splits them into, oh god, no, I'm not going to be able to remember, they're, somethings, coolers, he calls them coolers, and they're, like, the best people to have on your team because they support everyone. Then there are closers, and those are people who can kind of, like, you tell them what to do, and they do it really well. And then there's what he calls cleaners, which is, like, the top creme de la creme, and these are the, like, Jordans and Bryants and all that. And they're people who kind of, like, flow out of their essence, and they kind of don't require a lot of input from other people. They just kind of are these catalysts of athletic, like, prowess. And so parts of this book I was really, really into, and one of my favorite quotes I put on my Facebook page really recently, he wrote a note, to Dwayne Wade, whose name I keep getting wrong, he wrote a note to Dwayne Wade that said that in order to get what you really want, you must first be who you really are. And so he's kind of working with these superstars in, being able to really go after what they truly desire, and he seems to think that there's this, like, dark side of yourself that's your, like, raw desire that is really what pushes these people. And so I was really into part of it, and then, unfortunately, I think it might be partially the guy who reads it, like, the voice of the guy who reads it on my audiobook. And then on top of that, the guy's a little bit of a dick, and, it's, he acknowledges it. He's, like, one of the best compliments is being told that guy's the best at what he does, but what a dick, kind of thing. But it just kind of, it grated on me a little bit, so I'm a little bit divided about the book. I feel like some of his concepts are really great and really helped me in my training about, like, becoming just kind of unstoppable is what he really is training these guys to do. And then part of me was like, shut up, dick.
Yeah, that's exactly how I started to feel about this podcast, Sword and Scale, which we were talking about in some of the early episodes that I was obsessed with. Because it's so well made, but the host is a dick.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Every time he talks about somebody with mental illness, he's a real asshole about it. He was talking about that case where some guy decapitated someone on the Greyhound.
Yes.
And he was like, whatever statistic of people have schizophrenia, the guy who's sitting next to you on the bus could have voices in his head telling him to kill you. Don't be a... The first one he did, I thought I'd give it a go. It was about like women who kill their spouses, and he was like, these stories will make you look at your wife a little bit differently. And you're like, come on. Like, do you ever see that like Louis C.K. bit where he was like, statistically, like, men are the worst thing to ever happen to women? Like,
yeah, it's amazing that they date us, is what he was saying. They agree to go on a date with us because we might actually kill them. Yeah.
But what was actually worse about the fact that he said that on that episode was one of the... It was two stories. The first story was this woman in Texas, I think, who... she had some kind of mental problems and she shot her two daughters.
Oh, that's recent, yeah.
Yeah, and then the other one was a woman who had been, like, abused by her husband and then killed him.
Yeah.
So it's like, these are not the best examples, but...
Yeah. You're like, if your wife fits into this super small category of, like, abused and mentally unstable women, then you might look at her differently, but you should probably already know that.
Yeah, I mean, I just have some problems with the host. He's starting to really piss me off. And, I have no problem with crowdfunding. It's great. It's awesome. But he'll be like, I want you to think about how much of my podcast you've listened to for free. And then donate to my Patreon. It's just really dickish. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Like, I want you to think about the hours and hours that I spend doing this for you, for free, and you happily consume for nothing because you're so ungrateful and you should donate money. Yeah. So I'm going to look for a new podcast.
Awesome.
Are we being dicks?
We are, but you know what? Now? This is our podcast.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the same argument they would make.
Yeah.
Be a dick on my own podcast.
Totally. This is the platform on which you can be a dick in your own public, private manner.
Public, private manner? Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, I think that wraps it up. So, again, we are sponsored by Loblo. And you can get a 10% discount at Amazon.UK and Amazon.US. They ship anywhere in the world for free. And it is save numeral 2, ITK. So go check that out if you need GroinGuard. We both highly recommend it.
Yes.
Almost happy Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah. I'm just happy that I get the day off work for that.
So. Yeah. And I cannot believe that July is almost over. It's insane.
I know, when you were texting me yesterday, like, when should we do the podcast? And I was like, what about next week? You were like, next week isn't even July. I was like, what? I thought July just started.
Yeah, I feel that way also. I can only keep track of it because my dad's birthday is at the very end, and then my brother's birthday is, like, right after that, so it's like, the imminent birthdays are what allow me to know that it's, like, it's almost the end of July and the start of August.
Time is going too fast.
Yeah.
It's like when you have those Facebook memories things that come up. I hate them. It'll be like, 6 years ago, you did this. Yeah. Like, I had one the other day. It's like, 6 years ago, you graduated. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad I've used my degree so much since then. Please don't tell me that. I'm so glad that my student loan bill is, like, so much higher than it was.
Yeah, Emma, I'm coming up on 10 years from graduating from college. Like, I'm old.
I got the letter, the annual letter that we get the other day that was like the statement of this is how much you pay every month and this is the interest.
Yeah.
And the interest is more than what I fucking pay.
Yeah.
So my loan is now $5,000 more than it was when I graduated. So yeah. Hooray.
It's like you're digging a hole, but you're digging sideways so the dirt just keeps like piling on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun times. All right, well, I will talk to you soon. Thanks for a great podcast and chat. And have fun at work, yeah?
Yeah, all right. All see right. Ya.
Bye, Emma.
Bye.